Hey, everybody. We are GFBS. We're Grand Forks' best source. It's The War on Your Mind, The Great Reset, with Dr. Dan Stanislawski and David Waterman from the Midwest Public Health Coalition. Show today brought to you by Outsider Entertainment. They are your one-stop shop company for any upcoming events. Got all kinds of cool stuff for your new party or your latest party. Dynamic room lighting, sound systems, DJs, auto visual equipment, photo booths, all kinds of cool stuff. Now, maybe you got a wedding coming up or a corporate event, school dances, private parties, it doesn't matter. Hire them, Outsider Entertainment. Go to OutsiderEntertainment.net or email info@OutsiderEntertainment.net, or you can call them up 701-757-4300. Outsider Entertainment for your next event. Any questions or comments? The number is 701-213-0863. And before we get too much further into the show, it is time now for our daily segment called Jokes My Neighbor Tells Me. Here we go. Jokes My Neighbor Tells Me. Okay, here we go. What did the virologist say to the public? What did the virologist say to the public? Well, probably the opposite of what he'll tell them next week. What do you think of that one, Dr. Dan?
That was a good one. I think you changed it up because I thought the other one was better. Let's wait. Right. We'll wait and see.
Yeah, well, yeah, I guess that was kind of good, wasn't it? Yeah.
It was.
Let's let that PCR machine, you know, get.
We actually thought that was a punchline. Yeah. You were just teasing us before the show started.
Yeah, I didn't even realize that I pretty much gave you the punchline. Oh, boy. Dr. Dan and David, welcome back to the studio. I'm going to go through a couple of things here. 230 new cases of COVID yesterday in North Dakota, 9 in Grand Forks County. VAERS, check them out today through October 4th. Now 8,390 deaths from the vaccine. And then an interesting story came out, new test data showing a decline in North Dakota student math and English proficiency during the 2020-2021 school year. The results offer evidence about how the COVID-19 pandemic affected student learning in the state. Let's see here. All students who scored as proficient or advanced in English/language arts was 42%. That's a 5% decline from the spring of 2019. Math scores fell 7%. The data shows that Grand Forks School District with a 49% proficiency in ELA and a 38% in math. So, grades are going down for sure.
So, but does it matter if grades go down as long as white children understand that they're bad?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what really counts. Let's face it. And let's also decide that it's not just the masks. I mean, not just whether or not you know that you're bad if you're white, but also that you're not sure what gender you are. As long as you're confused about your gender and you know that you're that all bad people are white, you're doing okay.
Yeah.
As a student, because that's the most important thing.
You know, for how they're pushing the vaccine and the jab on people here in Grand Forks, interesting numbers. Health officials in Grand Forks say COVID vaccines for 12 years and under, still under 50%. Of Grand Forks populations has got the jab. So I don't know, maybe praise these people God are starting that. To think that we are.
I sure hope so.
So I have a question about the math proficiency and whatever that was. You said it was down 7%?
In North Dakota, let's see, 42%, that's a 5% decline. Math scores, yes, fell 7% across the state.
The year previously, we were at 47%? Sorry, I missed the numbers again, but we're less than 50% proficiency before that.
COVID.
Before COVID.
Yep.
And we're still giving our school board money to make new buildings? Is a new building going to improve?
Well, you know, when you get your new buildings, that's when you look good. And them kids, if they can't do the math, then we can probably get more new buildings because they don't do the math. They don't realize they's going to be paying for it.
Got to have air conditioning.
Oh my goodness. Is there any hope?
Open the windows.
Yeah.
Is there hope?
The War on Your Mind. How did you come up with that title today, Dr. Dan?
Well, it's, you know, because from this book I did a whole episode on this, and there was the one section that I did not get to that I thought is extremely important and apropos for our time. And because specifically I know some people who work with death in this city, I'll just put it that way. And I asked them about suicides and suicide attempts and suicide ideation, and then people going through with their suicides, and has it increased recently? Because we heard that last week alone, there was like 4 suicide attempts at Central High School.
Wow.
And then
with Central students.
Yeah, with Central students.
This is at the high school, but.
Right, right. Not at the high school, but yeah, with Central students.
Right.
And then that there was, there is an average of 7 suicide attempts that show up to the ultra emergency room every day.
Oh my gosh.
And so I don't, those numbers are still not confirmed, but I asked my contacts, and this individual was asking around as well, and it turns out there has been a lot more suicides in our region. Mm-hmm. And this is something that is absolutely happening across our country too. I know in Ohio there was, I mean, it was like the number one cause of death for 10 to 14 year olds in 2020 was suicide, you know? So there's a war. What I'm saying is there's a war on for your mind, because they want your mind to be theirs. And then if they can get you to a point where you will take yourself off of planet Earth, that is what they want. That is you neutralizing yourself. Mm-hmm. And so with that context, I want to read about this again, because this is the book COVID-19, The Great Reset. And they're talking about a reset of mental health and mental well-being. And we'll just, so how I interpret this is they knew all this stuff. They knew that lockdowns, and I think after reading some of this, you'll agree with me. I mean, maybe not, but let's have the debate. But they knew that lockdowns will increase mental anguish. They knew lockdowns will increase depression and stress, absolutely. And they talk about how in here, and then also that that will result in a net increase in people killing themselves and deaths of despair, which again, absolutely has been happening the last year. Mm-hmm.
And if I can just add, not just lockdowns, but isolating people.
Yeah.
You got to be quarantined. You got to be isolated.
Yes.
I mean, it's one thing if you're at home with your family, but if you're a single person and you're living on your own in an apartment and you already are somewhat isolated, and now they say you can't go to work, you mm-hmm. can't go out and shop, you can't do any of that stuff for 14 days, that starts to have an impact.
Sure.
On people.
Right.
Especially if it's a nice, you know, when there's a little bit of nice weather left.
Yeah.
You maybe have some stuff you want to get done.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're saying you can't do it. Yeah, that's stressful. Stress, that kind of stress is not good. Yeah. So.
Yep. So here we go. For years now, an epidemic of mental health has engulfed much of the world. The pandemic has already made it worse and will continue to do so. Most psychologists, and certainly all those we talk to, seem to concur with the judgment expressed in May 2020 by one of their peers. The pandemic has had a devastating effect on mental health. Obviously, we're seeing the tolls of that. Unlike physical illness, people with mental health issues often have wounds that are invisible to a non-professional's naked eye. Yet, in the past decade, mental health specialists report on an explosion of mental health problems, ranging from depression and suicide to psychosis and addictive disorders. This is another aspect too, addictive disorders, drug use, alcohol abuse gone up big time since the lockdowns, right? Yep. So here you go.
I'm just going to say people that have been sober, alcoholics who have been sober for decades, went back to the bottle during 2020 because of the lockdowns, the social distancing, the whole thing.
Yeah. And so I'll go ahead, John.
Sounds like Paul's having fun.
Yeah, he's got his little baby here. Beautiful kid.
Oh, no, that's not Paul making the noise. Okay, go ahead, Dan.
But yeah, and I'll say this too. I feel for these people, you know. Absolutely. They're going to tell you that there was already a mental health problem in this country, and it is because people are very materialistic, you know, and they search for goods in what the television tell them is good, which is not good. Right? It's not. It's, those things aren't going to bring money, fame, all that crap is not going to bring you happiness. Right? And if you have that as your ideals and your ideal good, and that's how you live your life, you will be inherently unhappy because that is not what you are designed for. Okay? So, in 2017... Can I interject on that really
quick?
Sorry, what's that?
Well, because they say that money can't buy you happiness.
Yeah.
But it can buy you a jet ski. And jet skis are pretty damn fun.
Oh, wait, we better. Okay, there we go. All right.
In 2017, all right, now, so again, 2017, pre-COVID, right? In 2017, an estimated 350 million people around the globe were suffering from depression. At that time, the World Health Organization predicted that depression would become the second main cause of disease burden globally by 2020. And that it would overtake ischemic heart disease as the leading cause of disease burden by 2030. So they're already saying by 2030, suicide, death of despair, that type of thing, will become the number one cause of death on planet Earth.
Wow.
In the U.S., the CDC estimated in 2017 that depression affected more than 26% of adults, approximately 1 in 20 moderate to severe symptoms. At that time, it also predicted that 25% of American adults would suffer from mental illness during the year, and almost 50%, half of Americans would develop at least one mental illness in their lifetime.
Wow.
That is wild.
That is stunning.
Yes.
If somebody started shooting people in a mall, that would make big news.
Sure.
But for somebody to impose the kinds of restrictions that we've seen that impose this type of suffering on an individual to the point that they reach a moment in their lives where they say life is not worth living anymore, and then they do it to themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Is that less tragic than the shooter in the mall? Is that person less dead if they die by their own hand instead of by the hand of a terrorist? And if the people that are doing it know that they're doing it and it's intentional, are they any less terrorists or evil murderers than the man with the gun or the knife or the bomb?
There's nothing sensational about committing suicide. I mean, that's not big news, you know, although it's happening all over and it's happening more than ever.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not being reported.
Right.
It is not being reported. The number of suicides that I know of that are nobody hears about,
mm-hmm.
that nobody knows about other than the family and friends of that individual is stunning. And so you can say, well, we shouldn't publicize that anyway. And I agree. I think that for the sake of the family,
sure.
you know, you want to respect the fact that they're already suffering terribly emotionally because of that loss of someone that they love who was so hopeless that they mm-hmm. took their lives. But we have to know that it's happening.
Yeah.
We have to know. We don't have to know the details. We don't have to know the names, but we have to know that it's happening. And it's happening more and more and more. And that was predicted. It was February of 2020 when they first started doing the lockdowns and doing all that stuff and suggesting. A friend of mine, he's been on the show, said, this is going to cause suicide. People are going to take their own lives because this is going to cause depression and hopelessness and despair, and it's going to happen. He said at the beginning, the first quarter of 2020.
And again, the World Health Organization knows that. They have professionals that absolutely know that. And keep in mind, the first time in the history of the world where virtually every country on planet Earth did the exact same thing
right.
at the exact time at the behest of the World Health Organization.
Right. And the world, and just to make sure that that's clear, when you say that the professionals of the World Health Organization know that, what you're saying is they know that when you impose these kinds of stressors on individuals, that will create depression and stress and anxiety and lead to deaths of despair and suicide.
They
know that in advance.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, and they actually said it because apparently I think they're proud of their plan and that it's working. Mm-hmm. I mean, these are truly evil people who are, I think, manipulated by the ultimate puppet master on Earth, which is Satan, and they're doing his will to destroy lives.
So 50% would develop one mental illness during their lifetime. So, and also that too, I mean, we're kind of getting tangent here, but that's okay. Who people turn to when they have these issues is the medical industry, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm.
And there has to be first of all, diagnosable disease that they have certain symptoms for. And then second of all, there has to be a treatment for that, right? The treatments for these things are pills because their basis is that you have a chemical imbalance in your mind, right? They never test you for a chemical imbalance.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't know that for sure. But then they give you something that will absolutely be giving you a chemical imbalance, whether it's SSRI, selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, or bupropion, Wellbutrin, that type of thing, which messes with your dopaminergic neurochemistry. It's something that to me is psychotic, actually. You know, it's something that is very extreme for the problems that are going on. And granted, I fully concede that there are a few people that this does help, a few people. But I know many that you don't have depression. Mm-hmm. You know, and drugs aren't going to do anything. You're going to be taking the drugs for the rest of your life because these things aren't cures and they're going to cause a lot more problems than they're going to solve, you know?
So, but they are for some people.
Yeah.
You're not denying that.
No.
Yeah. Okay. That's what he just said. Yeah. For some people that actually works. And I just want to point out that Dr. Dan is not shooting in the dark here. He did his PhD, his thesis on the dopamine mechanisms in your brain that work to, you know, the pleasure and reward centers and how that all works at a very intricate level. So it's something that he knows something about.
Well, he must be, because I can't even pronounce those words, and his words are longer than most of my sentences. That's something I got to deal with at home every day.
and so the thing is that what needs to be understood is that these chemical reactions that take place in the brain are predictable, mm-hmm. right? We understand them well enough. There's a great book. I don't remember the authors, but there's a book that talks about that called Hooked by a couple of doctors. And they talk about how the perversion of sexuality and the introduction of sexuality at a very young age and trying to get people, you know, to look at porn and thinking that these casual hookups are fine, the damage that it's doing to the individuals, to their brains, because the sexual response in intimacy was designed by God to, and they don't say this, they don't talk about God in the book, but I'm just saying it was designed by God to create a bond between a man and a woman when they get married, and that's to last a lifetime, because that's how powerful it is. And they talk about how now we have the technology to examine what happens chemically mm-hmm. in the brain during those experiences and the long-lasting effects that they have. But you can also create experiences for people, impose experiences on people that will have an opposite effect on their brain. In other words, rather than feeling good, it'll make them feel terrible and hopeless mm-hmm. and lousy and like mm-hmm. life is not worth living. Mm-hmm. And so we can manipulate the way that people feel inside by doing things that introduce chemicals into their brain or that restrict or inhibit chemicals from being released in their brains that are going to cause the desired effect. And that's exactly what the World Health Organization knows very well, probably better than Dr. Stanislavski does.
Definitely, mm-hmm. definitely. And the television does that, right? Those pleasure centers, the video games do that. Drugs do that. Sex does that. Yep. All of these things activate these same pleasure mechanisms within your brain, right? So you're
or suppress them.
Yeah, and that's fear. Actually, fear actually causes a massive suppression of the dopaminergic pleasure reward response, right? So we'll continue here.
And we've seen a massive propaganda campaign to promote fear around the world.
Yeah,
around the world.
Definitely.
And it's been very effective.
No doubt about it. Okay, so similar figures, but maybe not as severe, and trends exist in most countries around the world. In the workplace, the issue of mental health has become one of the big elephants in the corporate room. The epidemic of work-related stress, depression, and anxiety seems to be continuously getting worse. As a revealing example, in 2017-2018 in the UK, stress, depression, and anxiety accounted for more than half of the total working days lost due to ill health. For many people, traversing the COVID-19 pandemic will be defined as living a personal trauma. The scars inflicted may last for years. They definitely will. To start with, in the early months of the outbreak, it was all too easy to fall victim to the biases of availability and salience. These two mental shortcuts cause us to obsess and ruminate about the pandemic and its dangers. Availability makes us rely on immediate examples that come to mind when evaluating something, and salience predisposes us to focus on things that are more prominent or emotionally striking. For months, COVID-19 became almost the only news that was inevitably almost exclusively bad. Relentless reports of deaths, infectious cases, and all the other things that might go wrong, together with emotionally charged images, allowed our collective imaginations to run riot in terms of worry about ourselves and our closest loved ones. Such an alarming atmosphere had a disastrous effect on our mental well-being. Furthermore, media-amplified anxiety can be very contagious. All this fed into a reality that for so many amounted to personal tragedy, whether defined by the economic impact of income loss and job losses, and or the emotional impact of domestic violence, acute isolation and loneliness, or the inability to properly grieve for deceased loved ones. So, okay, if we can harken back to January of 2020 with all the images that were coming out of Wuhan, China,
right,
with all the
dead people in the
dead people in the streets, there were just CCTV videos of people just passing out in the streets, dying, you know, blood coming out of their orifices or whatever, you know, and then there's these big trucks coming down with spraying this stuff over the place. You all remember that, right? Yeah. That is what he's talking about right here in this book. It's something that's run on television that biases your mind big time. It scares you. It scares the living crap out of you, and it makes you far more susceptible to the messages they're sending.
Well, you know, not to that extent, but when you talk about stress and depression and anxiety with all of this pandemic stuff going on, again, not to that extent, but this weekend, I picked up a little head cold. But of course, what do? I have been stressed out all weekend thinking, did I finally get the COVID, you know, and all because of a little head cold, which I usually get one in the fall and one in the spring every single year. But because of this, right away, the first thing you think of is, oh my gosh, I hope you don't have COVID, or hopefully I don't have COVID. But it's just unwanted, uncalled for because of all of this.
Yes.
And this book, COVID-19 and the Great Reset, is written by Klaus Schwab, who is one of the authors of all the panic and all the nonsense that's going on, all the fear, so he knows it, right? He's like Dan said, he's kind of boasting about their accomplishments here in this book.
So what? Like what? Those images, though, again, which they say is amplified through the media. Of course, they're essentially casting a spell on the globe. They're saying you need to all be scared of this. You need to all panic and then get ready to be subservient to your masters who are going to lay down the laws that you will follow.
And it's incredibly effective. The apartment where my mother-in-law lives, there's a woman that lives in that same apartment, and she texted me saying how selfish I am and my family and I are for walking into the building without wearing masks. Because we could kill people there, like her, because she's got a compromised immune system. And then she wanted to say, do not reply to this text.
Well, then why did you text?
These people are, they're terrified, though. Mm-hmm. I mean, she's terrified.
Yep.
And she is impenetrably ignorant. Somebody, once they reach that point, telling them the truth, showing them the truth, proving that what they're saying, what they're believing is false, is of no value whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Because they cannot, to quote Yuri Bezmenov, they cannot assess true information anymore.
Yeah, so this...
They're incapable of realizing that what they just said is actually wrong, that they've been brainwashed. That's why it's called brainwashing.
Yeah, the pandemic turned her into a Karen.
Yeah. Yeah, worse than that. Yeah, she's literally like a... She's a zombified, unthinking, angry, hostile individual who would feel very justified. I'm guessing that she would, I don't know what she looks like. If I passed her on the street, I wouldn't recognize her. But I'm guessing that someone like her, based on the things that she said, would feel justified in doing violence against someone like me or Dan. Mm-hmm. They'd feel justified by it. And I think that that's exactly what Klaus Schwab wants to happen. Mm-hmm. He wants people to be willing to attack others, just like happened in Nazi Germany.
Yeah.
When people felt justified in attacking those dirty Jews because they were diseased and they were putting everybody else in society at risk. That's literally the narrative that they pushed on the German people. The Jews are diseased. And they're going to bring their disease to you if we allow them to walk around.
It's the stages of genocide, right? There's like the 10 stages, and part of it's dehumanizing the enemy by calling them names and making them think they're less than human, so that when the time comes to round them up and execute them, you'd be like, good, do it.
It's a pandemic of the unvaccinated. Mm-hmm. No, it's actually a pandemic of the... Of the misinformed and the demoralized and the indoctrinated. That's really what it is. These people are indoctrinated into the COVID doctrine of death and despair, and whatever they're told by the CDC, they will believe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've got friends that if they come from the CDC, it ain't true.
Right.
So Continuing, humans are inherently social beings. Companionship and social interactions are a vital component of our humanness. If deprived of them, we find our lives turned upside down. Social relations are, to a significant extent, obliterated by confinement measures and physical or social distancing, and in the case of COVID-19 lockdowns, this occurred at a time of heightened anxiety when we needed them most.
About that.
Rituals that are inherent to our human condition, handshakes, hugs, kisses, and many others were suppressed. Loneliness and isolation resulted. For now, we know neither whether or not we might return completely to our old way of life. We won't be. At any stage of the pandemic, but particularly towards the end of lockdowns, mental discomfort remains a risk. Even after the period of acute stress has passed, something that psychologists have called the third quarter phenomenon, in reference to people who live in isolation for a protracted period of time, like polar explorers or astronauts, they tend to experience problems and tensions toward the end of their mission. Like these people, but on a planetary scale, our collective sense of mental well-being has taken a very severe knock. Having dealt with the first wave, we are now anticipating another that may or may not come. Again, this is a year-old book, so it's coming. There's going to be a third and fourth and blah, blah, blah.
Oh, yeah. Which we've been saying for a year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And this toxic emotional mix risks producing a collective state of anguish. Already there. The inability to make plans or engage in specific activities that used to be intrinsic parts of our normal life and vital sources of pleasure, like visiting family and friends abroad, planning ahead for the next term at university, or applying for a new job, has the potential to leave us confused and demoralized. I don't know about you, but I mean, I'm not confused or demoralized, but I'm not going to get on a plane as long as they have masking. Sorry, not going to do it ever, period. You know,
yeah,
I mean,
well,
like,
exactly.
You have to consider other people like, if you're getting together for Thanksgiving, like, are you all vaccinated? If you're not, you can't be here. You know, that's happening in hundreds of thousands of families across our country. You know, this is a, again, planned weaponized thing that is occurring to us.
It's well, you know, if you invite me to your house, David, for Thanksgiving and say you are vaccinated and I'm not, who cares? I mean, if you're vaccinated, who cares if I'm not?
Yeah. Well, you should care, because if I'm vaccinated, that means I can get COVID-19 and have suppressed symptoms, which can then make you sick, because I don't even know I'm sick.
Yeah, yeah, well.
See, that's the problem. In fact, I just saw a sign on a door of some business. Somebody texted this, and it said, if you are vaccinated, do not enter these premises, because there are people that understand that you could be transmitting disease that we don't want. We're not interested in that. And I think that that's really smart.
Yeah.
In fact, I'm confident that when I got COVID, I got it from somebody who'd been vaccinated.
Mm-hmm.
I went to a funeral of a friend, and there were a bunch of people around there, and I'm confident, and they were elderly people primarily. I'm confident that many of them were vaccinated, and undoubtedly some of them had COVID with no symptoms.
Right.
Because the goal of the vaccine is to suppress symptoms, not to keep you from getting it or transmitting it. So I would say, you know, just looking from an outsider's perspective, if my goal was to kill people and to make people sick and to cause this disease to spread so that they could induce more and more fear at a deeper and deeper level, I'd say, man, wouldn't it be great if we could find a way? Because we know that asymptomatic spread isn't really real. We know it doesn't happen that way. But what if we could make it real? What if we could find a way to get someone to be able to be sick and be infectious and have a high viral load and not know it? Wouldn't that be wonderful? I mean, that'd be a great way that we can spread this biological weapon, you know, through all the people. And let's do it in such a way that makes them think that taking this, whatever it is, this pill, this injection, this rub, that it's making them safer by doing that. What if we could do that? I'd say that's brilliant.
Right.
That's a brilliant way to spread this disease. And it just so happens. I'm sure it's a coincidence. That just so happens to be exactly the way that the vaccines work. They suppress symptoms, period. They don't prevent infection. They don't prevent transmission. Or am I wrong about that?
No, you're absolutely right about that. And again, there's studies that show that people who are inoculated have much, much, much higher viral loads, hundreds of times, and are walking around and
without
potentially
symptoms.
Yeah, without symptoms and spreading it potentially. So,
yeah.
Okay, yeah.
To me, I mean, I got sick. I was pretty sick.
We're going to take a little break here. The War on Your Mind. It's The Great Reset with Dr. Dan Stanislawski and David Waterman with Midwest Public Health Coalition. Right now, I want to talk about Oh for Heaven's Cakes. You know, there is nothing better than treating yourself to some good homemade baked goods. Well, that's where Oh for Heaven's Cakes comes in. The best cupcakes and cakes for special occasions or maybe just a treat. They make incredible items by order, or you can just walk in to find out more. While you're there, enjoy homemade lunch and soup with keto, gluten-free, vegan, and diabetic options. If you're a business owner, want to treat your employees, check out their monthly employee discounts. Oh for Heaven's Cakes are on the north backside of the Grand Cities Mall, open Tuesday through Friday from 10 to 4, Saturdays 9 to noon. Call 701-757-CAKE or go to ohforheavenscakes@yahoo.com. Be a beautiful cupcake in a world full of muffins. Oh for Heaven's Cakes, right here in the Grand Cities Mall, back on the Great Reset. Dr. Dan and David in the house with the Midwest Public Health Coalition. And, okay, since I abruptly kind of moved in on you there.
I'm sorry, Jeff. Before we go back to that, I just want to make a little personal note, John. Last week was my wife's birthday.
Yep.
And like many people, she's gluten intolerant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And my wife is too.
Okay. Yeah. Yep. And so I'm not a big baker to begin with. When it's my birthday, my wife makes this beautiful, delicious birthday cake.
Mm-hmm.
But I felt, man, I want to give her a good birthday cake. But not only do not really bake, other than chocolate chip cookies, gluten-free, that's a whole other animal.
Yeah, it is.
And to make a gluten-free cake that actually
tastes good,
looks like a cake and tastes good,
yeah.
I said, I'm not even going to try that. So you'll never guess who I called.
Right down the hall.
Yeah. Just down the hall. And they made, I said, what size? They said, how many people? I said, probably five. They said, okay, 6-inch will be fine. I said, 6-inch? That sounds so small. They said, oh, no, you'll have leftovers. I said, let's do 8. Or how about 10? They said, well, that's huge. I said, okay, you know what? You're the experts. I'll do 6. So I did a 6-inch cake. And it was fantastic.
Did you have leftovers?
We did have leftovers, just like she said. It did not taste like a gluten-free cake. It was delicious.
There you go. A testimonial from David Waterman of Oh for Heaven's Cakes.
Yes, sir.
All right, Dr. Dan.
Now back to a more somber note.
Unfortunately.
So to continue. For many people, the strains and stresses of the immediate dilemmas that followed the end of lockdowns will last for months. Is it safe to go on public transport? Is it too risky to go to a favorite restaurant? Is it appropriate to visit this elderly family member or friend? For a long time to come, these very banal decisions will be tainted with a sense of dread, particularly for those who are vulnerable because of their age or health condition, or if they're injected, because only the people that care and are scared of this thing are injected. So,
and I noticed that this, I think, really gives some credibility to Dan's position that this is something that they're proud of. He doesn't begin that sentence with the word sadly or unfortunately mm-hmm. or tragically. He just says, this will lead to this.
Yeah.
Because he's happy about it. Because that was part of the plan. I mean, it was intentional.
Right?
It was intentional.
Yep.
From the very beginning. I've been reading books like this for a really long time. These guys paramoralize. They make something sound moral and good when really they're like, it's not. Yeah, we're pulling this pulling the rug over your eyes here. Like,
right.
You don't see the deep meaning of what we're talking about here. So at the time of this writing, which was June 2020, so again, over a year ago, the impact of the pandemic in terms of mental health cannot be quantified or assessed in a general way, but the broad contours are known. In a nutshell, individuals with pre-existing mental health conditions like depression will increasingly suffer from anxiety disorders. Social distancing measures, even after they've been rolled back, will have worsened mental health issues. In many families, the loss of income consecutive to unemployment will plunge people into the death of despair phenomenon. Domestic violence and abuse, particularly against women and children, will increase as long as the pandemic endures, and vulnerable people and children, those in care, the socioeconomically disadvantaged, and the disabled in need of an above-average level of support will be particularly at risk of increased mental distress. For many, an explosion of mental problems occurred during the first months of the pandemic and will continue to progress in the post-pandemic era. In March of 2020, at the onset of the pandemic, a group of researchers published a study in The Lancet. The Lancet's like the biggest medical journal coming out of Europe, that found that confinement measures produced a range of severe mental health outcomes, such as trauma, confusion, and anger. So again, March 2020, they know confinement measures will produce all of these problems and cause further mental health. Although avoiding the most severe mental health issues, a large portion of the world population is bound to have suffered stress to various degrees. First and foremost, it is among those already prone to mental health issues that the challenges inherent in the response to the coronavirus, lockdowns, isolation, anguish, will be exacerbated. Some will weather the storm, but for certain individuals, a diagnostic of depression or anxiety could escalate into an acute clinical episode. Again, suicides exploding. Right. There are significant numbers of people who, for the first time, presented symptoms of serious mood disorder like mania, signs of depression, and various psychotic experiences. These were all triggered by events directly or indirectly associated with the pandemic and the lockdowns, such as isolation and loneliness, fear of catching the disease, losing a job, bereavement, and concerns about family members and friends. In May of 2020, the National Health Service, England's clinical director for mental health told a parliamentary committee that the demand for mental health care would increase significantly once the lockdown ended and would see people needing treatment for trauma for years to come. There is no reason to believe that the situation will be very different elsewhere. And it goes on a little bit more. I won't read much more. I'll just read this last paragraph here. The impact of COVID-19 has given rise to a wider and deeper array of mental health problems affecting greater numbers of the population, many of whom might have been spared in the immediate future had it not been for the pandemic, which, of course, is not the pandemic. It's the response to the pandemic.
Exactly.
Viewed in these terms, the coronavirus has reinforced, not reset, mental health issues. So,
reinforced, not reset. And I think if Dr. Jean Gullix were here, she might be inclined to say that the people most gravely affected are the children.
Absolutely.
And the lockdowns, the isolations, the quarantine, the masking, the forced masking of children. Children, you know, I cannot imagine, and I'm just going to say this, because I don't know where the parents of Grand Forks are. I don't get it. If I saw my child saying, "I can't breathe in this thing. I'm sorry, honey. You're going to have to wear it to go to school." I couldn't say that to my child. I could not say that. I would be down at that school building in a hot minute letting everybody know, you do not put a mask on my child. You're not going to make them feel ostracized or awkward. You're not going to point them out. You're going to let them go through their day like a normal child. That's what's going to happen here. Or he'll be hearing from my lawyer.
When you talk about students and children, you guys were at the Warren School Board meeting last night?
Yes, sir, we were. Yes.
And how did that go?
Well, I thought that it went well. There were two other, Dr. Dan and I both spoke. There was also a medical doctor there, along with an administrative type individual who were, they were both there to promote the masks and the vaccine, saying we got to just do this for other people. You know, if you care, if you don't care about yourself, fine, but wear a mask to protect others.
And get the shot.
And so, so then we spoke after they did. And then one of them, the administrative type, he wanted to then rebut the things that we said, which he can't do anyway, but he tried. And so they didn't appreciate that. The school board didn't appreciate because that they said, this is not a debate. You can't do that here. So we went out and talked to them out in the parking lot after we were finished. And I found the administrator to be rather intractable in his position that he knew what they were talking about and we don't, which was, of course, just the opposite. But the doctor, I spoke with the medical doctor, and even though he'd been highly misinformed, he was an intelligent man, and we had a really good conversation. As I said, he's been misinformed. When I asked him about the deaths from the vaccine, he looked at me and he said, and he meant this. He said, there has not been one single death from the COVID vaccine.
Hmm, really?
I said, well,
I could show him a death certificate.
I said I was on doing a live podcast, and the host got up and left in the middle of the podcast. And this is what we found out that happened afterwards. I told him about your mother-in-law, and he looked at me, and then I said I interviewed a woman from Bemidji, Minnesota, who got a massive headache immediately after taking the shot, and a week and a half later, she was paralyzed on one half of her body and blind in one eye, permanently blind in one eye. I said, Varus has shown 15,000 deaths, and that's way underreported. I said, whistleblowers within the government agencies are now saying it's actually much higher than that. But 15,000 deaths on Varus. And then he kind of changed his position. I don't think he really realized what he was saying, but he said, well, I think he said, there, he said 200 and something like 225 million people, 225 million people have been vaccinated in this country. And this is a country in a population of 360 million. I said, well, it's actually 331 million, but 32 million. But he says, I think 15,000 is pretty good. I said, are you kidding? I said, but wait a minute. These aren't elderly sick people that are dying from the vaccine. These are healthy people, young people, like a 27-year-old doctor. I showed his picture here months ago on the show. 27-year-old doctor who just finished in medical school. Looks like he lives in the gym. I mean, this guy was super healthy, and he died days after taking the vaccine. Yep.
Well, if you know that many people died from the flu vaccine or, say, the shingles vaccine or something like that, wouldn't that be big news?
It'd be stopped immediately.
Yeah, exactly.
Immediately.
It would be stopped immediately.
Like they did with the swine flu vaccine after 50 deaths.
Yep. But, you know, the reason why those haven't been pulled and the reason why we don't read about deaths from, you know, the vaccines I mentioned is because they were tried and they were tested. They were done the right way. And people aren't dying from the flu vaccine. Yeah. Am I right?
Well, no. I wouldn't say they were done the right way.
Well, you know what I mean.
Well, they had a longer...
They went through the
research,
the real protocol like you're supposed to do.
Much longer R&D period.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot. I don't want to get into that this episode.
Yeah,
okay. But we could get into that another episode. Yeah. We could do one on why vaccines are such a bad idea. We could certainly do that episode, and then all the doctors could roll their eyes and say, oh, that's not true. These people are anti-vaxxers. And by the way, the anti-vaxxer... moniker is just like saying somebody's a conspiracy theorist, right? They've worked very hard. Big Pharma's worked very hard to say, well, if you're anti-vaxxer, these anti-vaxxers, that's supposed to make normal people who are ignorant people think, oh yeah, these guys are kooks. If you're an anti-vaxxer, you're a kook. Well, except that I've met parents who have severely vaccine injured children. Who are dealing with the tragedy of knowing that they made a decision, an ignorant decision, trusting what their ignorant doctor told them, and now they every single day they deal with the fact that they've got a 14, 15, 16, 20, 22, 23-year-old vaccine-injured child who will never live a normal life, who was completely normal until taking a vaccine, and now they are permanently, mentally, and physically impaired.
I was called an anti-vaxxer, and I said, you're wrong. I said, I've had the flu vaccine. I've had numerous vaccines in my life. I'm not afraid to take a vaccine. I am just not going to take a vaccine that I don't trust, and that's being forced on me. I'm not an anti-vaxxer. I want to take a little bit of time here. I want to ask you guys a couple of questions now. I had all this stuff here ready to go. Do you think that Southwest Airlines, they kind of shot themselves in the foot, I'm guessing right now? We've been seeing on the national news of all these flights being canceled. Well, what happened is they gave their pilots so much time to get the jab. Right. Otherwise, you lose your job. These pilots all said, screw it. There's a billion pilot jobs out there. There's a pilot shortage right now around the world. Mm-hmm. Not going to be hard for these guys to find a new job. So what did they do? And I can't believe that Southwest Airlines didn't figure this out. They all decided, well, okay, we're all losing our job here at the end of the month or whatever. Let's all take our vacation that's coming to us. Let's shut this airline down. And they did. Yeah. And they basically shut them down. Move. So Southwest now, they just announced that, they announced that free flights to all vaccinated people, and especially if you know how to fly an airplane. Wait, there we go. One more thing I wanted to talk about quickly, President Biden, because we haven't talked about him yet. Do you see his average approval rating? Has plunged. It has plummeted nearly 15 points since just June. Even the libs and the Democrats are starting to figure it out.
Yeah.
He's not the guy to lead this country. He's leading it right to the garbage, right to the toilet.
But we knew that was going to happen too, didn't we? I mean, come on. If you pay attention at all, if you've got half a brain, if you've got an IQ of at least 70, you know what the guy's going to do before he even starts.
Because he's
a communist pawn. He works for the CCP, the Chinese Communist Party, and he and his whole crew. And that's what they're here to do, is to destroy America, just like Barack Obama did his best to undermine American institutions, the economy, people's faith in their fellow man as Americans. You know, when the whole Trayvon Martin thing went down, and George Zimmerman was being castigated and crucified in the press over shooting his thug who was saying, "You're going to die," and beating his head into the pavement. And President Barack Obama goes on national television and says, "If I had a son, he would have looked like Trayvon."
Oh, gee.
That's why I called him.
Doesn't his wife kind of look like that?
That's why.
Whoops.
That's why I called him the divider in chief. But Biden is just doing the same thing on steroids. And now that he's got the battle axe of COVID, he's got the bludgeon of COVID to beat up Americans. He's doing it.
Yeah.
And he's not the president. You know, he's still a poser. Yep. He was not elected. President Trump won in a landslide election. That whole thing was stolen. So it's all fraudulent. And that's eventually going to come out.
I was like, and you guys, people who watch the show know I'm no fan of Donald Trump.
Uh-huh.
But even I, like during the election season, I was like, you know, the Democrats want Trump to win because they're running a dead man against them. I mean, it's like, it's obvious this guy doesn't have a mind of his own, you know, so...
And what gets me is if you call yourself
when you say the man doesn't have a mind of his own, you're talking about Biden.
Biden, well, yeah. Trump too. But again, that's
here's what gets me.
Beg to differ.
But if you consider yourself to be a true American, you don't not vote for a guy just because you personally do not like him.
No,
you have to take our country into consideration. What is best for our country? What is not the best for our country? Say what you want about Trump. He brought the country back up. I mean, we had U.S. steel again. We weren't importing everything. We weren't importing oil that we have a big-time abundance of here in the United States. We were totally self-sufficient for the first time as a country. And now look at it. I mean, we went from under $2 a gallon gas to now, I checked yesterday, it was up to $3.09. Dang near a dime more expensive than it was in Fargo. Right. But it's not going to drop. It's going to keep going up, people. You got to take your views, do the research, but just because you don't like a guy doesn't mean you vote against him. Even if he did something good, the Democrats hated it.
You know, I've met Democrats who say, well, I don't like Trump. He's a bad man. Hey, did you see what he said? You know, I saw the video of what he said to that woman. Oh, you mean... 19 years ago?
Yeah.
Yeah, really? Okay. Did you read the book he wrote 30 years ago? He said, well, I do like what Trump did for, you know, he did some good things for the country. I like what he did for business, and I like what he did for the economy, and I like what he did for, what about for Christians? What about for the church? We've never had a more pro-Christian president in my lifetime.
True. That's not true.
It is true.
No.
Yeah, it is.
No, that guy's not... The guy's a pretend Christian.
Anyway.
Whether he's a pretend Christian or not, the policies.
Well, sorry. Let's talk about that.
Okay, let's talk about that.
The man is a serial sexual adulterer, right? Serial. I mean that. Granted, that what he talked about was 19 years ago. That little grab the you know what. Yeah, sure. Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. But look what happened in the run up there. Who he was, you know, getting into bed with. Just put it that way. And this is a 70-year-old man, right? So this is a guy who has no problem sleeping around, have all kinds of wives. So all you got to do is put a Bible with him and put him on television, and now he's a Christian. They did that same thing with Bill Clinton. Again, there's a war on for your mind. It's perception management.
Or John Kennedy.
Right. Yes, John Kennedy definitely was a problem.
All right, I'm going to stop this right now. Right now, if there was an election tomorrow, would you vote for Biden or would you vote for Trump?
If I absolutely had to?
If you absolutely had
to. Well, I think so.
If those are the options.
Well, I wouldn't. Yeah, if I had. First of all, I wouldn't vote. I didn't vote in this last mm-hmm. election. And for the record, I voted for Trump the first time and mm-hmm. again, didn't vote at all the second time. But if I absolutely had to, I would vote for Trump, I guess. Okay. Yeah. But I do think there's merit to saying that Biden's actually better for our side, because what's happening is it's obvious what he's doing. It's obvious how bad he is. Where Trump, he disguises it. I mean, the last year of his election, they printed more money, or the last year of Trump's presidency, they printed more money than the last 70 whatever years combined, right? That's communism. That is bringing socialism. They started the universal basic income, right? Also,
but that's still Congress. That was still Congress doing
that. Yeah, but Trump's approving all this stuff, right? Trump's signing executive
orders. Because
Trump also did the Operation Warp Speed, which is killing millions of people. I don't care what he says now. I don't care if he comes out against it now. How is he going to... He's the one that unleashed this thing on us, right? He took money away from the WHO, but who did he give it to? He gave it to Gavi.
Okay, right? So let me ask this question. If Operation Warp Speed was done intentionally and he knew what he was doing, does that change things if he knew what he was doing versus he didn't know what he was doing and he actually trusted Fauci and he actually thought that he was doing a good thing? I mean, if you do a bad thing with good intentions versus doing a bad thing with bad intentions, is there a difference between
those
two? There's
a difference for his personal judgment that's coming to him, sure. But what you're talking about there is either evil or extreme incompetence. Take your pick. Do you want someone who's extremely incompetent that's going to unleash a plague upon the people that they're being mind controlled into taking?
So if everybody, if his advisors, and he doesn't have the personal understanding of what you do, he doesn't understand it the way that you do. He doesn't understand it the way that I do, because we've spent a lot of time studying this. Hundreds of hours, thousands of hours studying this stuff.
Right.
He's the president. And that guy deals with a lot of stuff all day long. He works long hours, gets up early, goes to bed late. I mean, that's kind of his thing. But he spends a lot of time doing a lot of different stuff. And he has to, at some point, especially with military things, he's got to rely on the advisors that he has, who he has to trust. And if they're telling him, if they're giving him bad information, I would maintain
that... But he was supporting it long after, though. He was still supporting it long after.
Yeah, and that's right. And I agree with you. And whether or not, and so, but if he was supporting it and he knew that it was wrong, versus now when he's saying the vaccines killed more people than COVID, he certainly doesn't seem to be supporting it today.
Right. And did he say, "I'm sorry for killing you all"? Did he say, "All those people who died from it, I'm sorry for my part in that"? Does he apologize? Does he ask for forgiveness?
I don't know.
No.
He may have. Also, I don't know. I mean, I can't answer that question.
No, also, you got to look into people's past as well. I mean, this guy took money from the big boys, big time. I mean, he went bankrupt in New York City. That's one thing. And they could have ended his career there, but they said this guy is such a good salesman. He's a good product that we're going to keep him alive. In their terms, they're going to keep him alive. Not physically alive, but alive and selling what they want him to go out there and sell.
What are you talking about? He lost money in New York City.
Oh, he went bankrupt big time. There was like 26 banks or something he was indebted to. And then they took him to court, and he lost. But they could have said your career's over. But they said no, we're going to keep you alive to recoup our money.
But there are lots of multimillionaires who've gone bankrupt.
It's their companies, sure,
but again,
bankrupt.
That happens. But again, let's get to it. 1990, his Atlantic City hotel went bankrupt.
Yes.
Who came in and bailed him out? A little company called Rothschild Incorporated. Right, the person that was the executor of that deal on behalf of Rothschild Incorporated was a man named Wilbur Ross, who became the Commerce Secretary under Trump. So there's comeuppance that he has to repay. He's in debt to big boys. Also, he has the stench of Jeffrey Epstein all over him. Jeffrey Epstein was recruiting out of Mar-a-Lago, his resort, for years. You think Trump didn't know about it? Trump was accused of raping teenagers multiple times, right? And see, if I'm CNN, even if it's just an accusation, even if it's wrong, CNN has no problem lying. But if if I'm CNN and I want to destroy this man, that's what I'm running. But they don't want that information out there, because it's perception management. And that's what Donald Trump is perception. And it keeps the right, the conservatives, on the couch. And while Trump's out there playing 4D, 5D chess,
there were women that came forward and accused Trump of sexually assaulting them, and they all came to nothing, and CNN ran with those things. They ran with those stories. So
okay,
if there was any
but not
truth,
teenagers, not pedophilia.
So if there was any truth to those, I think that CNN would have been all over it. If they would have had any evidence
at
all.
No, because the same masters that run Donald Trump run CNN, run Fox News. Same people.
Yeah, I don't believe that at all, that CNN wanted Trump to be...
It's inherent that people have a need for a savior.
So are you saying... Yeah, but are you saying that these people, the people that run the banking industry, that the Rothschilds would have preferred Trump over Hillary Clinton as president?
I don't know. I have no idea.
Well, think about that.
Well, it's possible. I can't... See, we're getting into speculation there because they might have... Because what happened, there might be a different scenario if they put Hillary in.
So if we step back and look at what's happened over the last 4 years, 5 years, Trump undid so many of the things that these guys wanted, that they worked for decades to accomplish. He undid them, and now they're undoing the things that he did.
Undid what?
The whole whole destruction, the eating away of our economy, of our business, of American business.
The economy was tanking under Trump too. I'm sorry, but like just because stock markets are going up, is the economy's not doing better.
No, no, no. What I'm talking
about
is
housing bubbles increased. There's an everything bubble that increased under Trump.
What I'm talking about is the way that small business improved under Trump, because small business absolutely improved under Trump. Yeah. Small business improved, big business improved, medium-sized business improved. I talked to people that said, yeah, I got a $1,000 bonus from my company after Trump did his whatever it was with, I don't remember the details anymore. Because it was so good for American business, and Trump did that. He complained about how China's been eating our lunch for decades. He was saying that in his book 35 years ago, how every deal that we do with China and a bunch of other countries are bad for America. Trump actually started undoing a lot of those things. He took us out of NAFTA, which they said was impossible. Nancy Pelosi said, that's impossible. Ha, you're an idiot. You're never going to take us out of NAFTA. But he did. So you don't turn the ship that big around that quickly.
Right. The U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement, same thing as NAFTA, though. Again, he signed that, brought that into being, too, which is basically the same thing as NAFTA.
So how do
you... It's actually worse.
How is it worse than NAFTA?
Because, it takes more trade out. It creates essentially a bigger union. It creates a union of a North American trade union, essentially. A bloc, a trading bloc, which is exactly what Karl Marx wanted in his Communist Manifesto. He wanted the world to be divided into the Asian bloc, the European bloc, and the North American bloc, the American bloc, right? And that's what Trump's bringing towards.
Remind me to never bring up Donald Trump again on the Great Reset, because you guys have pretty much used up all your time arguing about Donald Trump now.
Well, people need to hear this, because people are still under, you know, the perception, because people need a savior. They're so desperate to want a savior that's going to come and bring them in. And a virtuous man who is going to tell the truth will never be elected into the powers of the president. Never. It will not happen again while we're alive. And Trump is a part of the problem. To me, he's more insidious than a Joe Biden, just because he puts out the perception that he's there to help you. In my opinion, he absolutely is not.
Can we still be friends if I tell you you're barking up the wrong tree?
Absolutely.
Okay, good.
I am good friends with people I disagree with.
All right. Absolutely. Yeah. And that's what we're all here for.
Yeah.
There are people that disagree with us. There's people that agree with us. It's
but we're talking about out there. But at some point, we're talking about things that, if we want to dig into to this in detail, here's the thing that neither Dan or I can do. We can hear stories, we can read reports, but we can't know what's in someone's heart, right? Do I think that President Trump was unfaithful to his wife or to his wives? Yeah, I think he probably was. And I thought that was reprehensible for him to do that, just like I think it's reprehensible for Bill Clinton to do that, or anybody that does that.
Sure.
Right? That's just wrong. That's wrong. Whether or not these other things, whether or not he did these other things, whether or not his intention is to do evil to this country, that's a whole other discussion. And because I don't know him personally and you don't know him personally, I don't think that we can answer that. In his book, he talks about how his Atlantic City thing went bad, and how he worked his way out of that, and the mistakes that he talks about, the mistakes he made in The Art of the Deal. I mean, he's written several other books. That's the only one that I've read. But he talks about those mistakes, and he talks about why he does things the way that he does. And I think that he, I think that there's a big part of him that wants to do what's right. I know that he appointed more Christians, more strong Christians, to positions in Washington, in the White House, than any president in my lifetime. He brought back the National Day of Prayer. He had prayer groups and Bible studies in the White House more than any other president. So the people that I know who know other people in Washington, D.C. personally say that he was very... Look, you know, you talk about Saddam Hussein. He was a truly evil man. And yet, he was a friend of Christians in when he was running Iraq. Christians actually lived in relative peace and safety under Saddam Hussein. But he also murdered his enemies, mm-hmm. including his own uncle.
His own family.
Because he disagreed with something that yep. he said. So he took yep. his uncle into the other room, stabbed him to death, you know, and then stomped on his body, and then came back out and finished the meeting. So, I mean, this was an evil psychopath. But for the sake of the Christians in that country, he actually was good for them in terms of their ability to practice their faith without fear. I would never say that Donald Trump did anything as bad as Saddam Hussein did.
Okay.
But
Midwest Public Health Coalition, are you guys on the road? You guys have been out and about a lot lately. Any events coming up?
We do, in fact. We've got an event in St. Paul next week on Thursday.
Yep. Is that right? Invergrove Heights.
Okay. Yeah. I got a bunch of relatives down there.
Thursday.
Good. Yeah, let them know.
And they have a lot of kids.
All right.
Let them know.
They've got one, two, three, four kids. Three are in school. So they might be interested. Where is it at?
Is the Veterans Memorial Place? I don't know exactly. I can't remember.
I don't.
We'll have more details next
Tuesday.
Okay.
And yeah. I think we have the flyer up on our Facebook page now.
Right.
So people can go to our Facebook page and check it out there.
Yep.
But yeah, that'll be 6:30 at the Veterans Place in Invergrove Heights next Thursday.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't. Yeah.
Well, gentlemen, thanks for coming in. I got to go drive beat truck. So I got to get out of here. The War on Your Mind, The Great Reset, always great to have Dr. Dan Stanislavski and David Waterman in the show. The Tuesday show, The Great Reset, it's one of our best ones, and we hope you all enjoyed it. Hey, don't forget, we're only in Facebook jail for a while longer, but you could check out Rumble. It's a pretty cool new thing. We are on Rumble now, and a special shout-out going out to Executive Properties. They are looking to hire somebody. Now, Executive Properties does all types of commercial and residential work, and they do snow removal, and they are good at it. They've got like 35 years of experience, and that's just with the one guy. That's with Barry Romo. He's their main man. So make sure you check out the reviews on Facebook and Google. You can call them 701-330-1273 or go to executiveproperties.org. Maybe you want to do a little snow removal. Maybe you want to pound some nails. This would be the company to work for. I know these guys personally, and they do a great job. Let's see. Tomorrow, Grand Forks Public Information Officer for the City of Grand Forks, John Bernstrom, stocks in to talk to the about city stuff and more. I can tell you guys had a lot more to talk about. Hey, remember to like, share, tag, and follow us. Hit that notification bell on your smartphone. And again, remember, we are on Rumble. Grand Cities is an awesome place. Grand Forks' best source is giving it an identity again.